So here's what happened on Easter Day.
Yeah.
We had guests arriving sort of mid-morning-ish, so we couldn't, you know, family coming from afar, and so we couldn't really go to the normal services. So we thought we'd go to an early one. So there's a church near here, one of my absolute favourite churches, by the way.
Okay.
And it's about a 15-minute walk past the old canal, basically.
Oh, lovely.
So we walked there.
Great.
On the morning, lovely morning, chiff-chaffs in the trees.
Oh, beautiful.
You know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know. And it said it had an 8:30 communion, so we were going there for that.
Right.
Thought this is perfect. Lovely walk there, arrived there, perfect time, only to find it didn't have an 8:30 communion that day. That everything was at 10 o'clock in other churches. So we sat in the churchyard, and I read the Bible accounts of the resurrection to Claire, and we listened to the birdsong and the woodpeckers and the chiff-chaffs. And,
sounds like the most perfect Easter service anyone could ever have.
Yeah, it was lovely and very memorable. But here's the problem. Last week I said, I'm turning into you. And this is exactly what you would do.
Your transformation is complete, my young Padawan.
Welcome to Mid Faith Crisis Podcast, episode Literally Don't Care. 236, probably, something like that.
Shoddy. and disappointing.
Oh, it's not disappointing, is it? I mean, it might be shoddy, but people surely can't be disappointed in that now. That's what they tune in for, I would have thought.
I suspect most of the listeners don't care what number it is, to be
no.
fair. Yeah.
Actually, isn't it funny how you use old-fashioned terms still? People don't tune in to a podcast, do they?
No, they don't. No.
But people haven't, in fact, tuned in on a radio for about 30 years.
Or more. Yeah.
Or more. Anyway, welcome to episode 236-ish of the Mid-Faith Crisis Podcast. My name's Nick Page, and there's Joe Davis.
Hello. Nice to see you. To see you nice.
Thank you, Brucey. How lovely. So, yeah, so it was a nice Easter morning. It was lovely, actually. But, yeah, very you-like. Mm. If I'd had a seagull mask, I'd have put it on and danced around.
I was down with the seagulls, obviously, Easter morning, watching the tide come in. Very fast spring tide, actually. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
I shall reflect further with you about Easter. But how are you, dear boy? How are the leaks? What's going on? All that stuff.
Yeah, well, there were many different varied kinds of leaks, guttering leaks and plumbing leaks and door leaks. And you just have to live with that. You know, last week I talked about the spiritual discipline of plumbing.
Yes, you did.
Right, which is about patience and about you know, perseverance and sealant as well. That's the other part of that.
Yes, very important spiritual discipline.
This week I learned about the spiritual discipline of electricity.
Uh-oh.
Or of electrical work, really.
Oh, no.
Which, is again, is about patience. But it's also about fundamental mystery, I've realised, that nobody knows how this thing works, and you just copy what somebody did before. So there's a deep mystery there.
Okay, good.
Well, and that's just putting up a light, you know. I do find with electrics, I look at it and I think, well, okay, as long as I copy the colours, we should be okay here. Really.
Yeah. Exactly.
Generally we are.
What
I think I understand
wrong?
It a bit more than that, but, you know, yeah, what could go wrong? anyway, so lots of work going on, yeah. But don't want to go on about that. It's quite sad moments this week.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about possessions and, you know, what, because the house is feeling more home-like because we've got all our stuff in. I've got pictures up and stuff like that. But I set up my hi-fi, right?
Your hi-fi. No one has done that for 30 years either, but that's nice.
No, because I've still got a record player.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a turntable and a...
Okay.
I've got a cassette deck somewhere.
Of course you have.
And I've got lots of CDs and stuff. So I was setting that up, and firstly, one of my speakers had gone. That's just gone completely in the move. That's just not working. Then I realised that the turntable, the tone arm had broken, so I got to get a new turntable.
Oh.
But here's the killer.
Right.
My amplifier suddenly started smoking.
Ah, that's not a good sign.
And crackling and making noises, and it's bust. Now, you'd say that's fine, it's just an amp, but I bought that amp with my first student grant.
I was going to say, is it an actual amp with, you know, the old
it's
sort
It's got
of
lights and
all that stuff going on.
VU meters and
things that would smoke.
yeah, and I bought it with my first student grant. It cost me 40 quid.
Wow.
In 1979. So I've had that a long time, and I felt genuinely gutted.
Yeah,
that's one of my treasured possessions. But you got to sit lightly to it, haven't you? Really?
Yeah,
it's gone.
It's all about letting go. But that is hard. Yeah, no, I can see that is a.
Yeah, it's how the object means more than the object. You know what I mean? It's just an amp. It's just, but actually, it was more. It was kind of like
it was your youth. You know. It was your college years. It was your joy. It was.
Yes, my youth. Has basically blown up now. It's smoking and it's got to be thrown away in the bin of small appliances.
Also, on a more cheery note, it's what's happening to us as well now.
This is true, yeah.
Bits are failing.
Valves are blowing.
Valves are blowing. Valve was the word I was looking for earlier. Yeah, an amp with valves. Brilliant. Yeah. Ah, yeah.
So, yeah, so that's a bit sad. But some good bits.
Go on.
Walked down the road to a local pub and attended a folk session.
Did you? Did you put a finger in your ear?
I did, because it was particularly loud and I wanted to concentrate on the beer. So that was nice.
Good.
Was nice. Good beer, good pub, good music. It was great, yeah. Good. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
I suppose it is, really, yeah.
So that's me, really, yeah.
Excellent. Good.
And your good self?
Yes, yeah, okay. I meant to say something to you, actually, last week. I think we didn't cover this, but I preached in Mexico. I actually said yes when they asked me to speak at the church. This was the first Sunday.
You said you were going to do
it.
My
brother was there. I preached. And here's my abiding... I have lots of things to talk about, actually, from not having preached a long time. But the big thing was the offering bags. The offering bags were on like two... no, listen. They were on like 2 meter sticks. I forgot to ask afterwards, is this a COVID thing? I didn't. So instead of, you know, like passing a bag along a row, you know, one to another, no, they stand at the end of the road and shove it under your nose because they can. It was absolutely brilliant. It was such comedy. And I loved the whole morning was worth it for the offering bags.
Offering bags? You don't get them anymore, do you?
Because you do in Mexico.
Everybody does, you know, like, I go to our church, we left, our old church had a contactless card.
Did
thing
they?
Put in.
Contactless. Did, yeah. Is that right?
Because nobody has cash. But those bags, yeah, you always put it in. And I was tempted to take out change, but you never did. No. Really.
You see, I haven't been to church really since churches have obviously started having contactless. But what a good idea, may I say. Excellent. Good. Well done. Well done, churches.
Offering bags. I haven't seen those for ages. Brilliant.
Yes, so that was good. I'm loving the Chiff Chaffs back singing. As you know, it's always a good thing for me. I love that. And then I was reflecting. So my Easter was, I think, a bit more disappointing than yours was. I went to the beach. I did a thing, just me, no one else. I wasn't sure whether to do one of the sort of Easter meditations like we've done before and invite a crowd through Facebook, but I didn't in the end. I wasn't feeling it at all. And in fact, that little phrase, I wasn't feeling it, really sums up Easter, I think, for me.
Okay.
I did not get a sense of resurrection, joy and hope. And I was wishing it to everyone around me and, you know, texting to people, probably you as well, I imagine. But, you know, sending good wishes and, you know, resurrection, joy and all that stuff. But I think that I feel a bit stuck in the Good Friday, Saturday bit at the moment. I mean, and I suppose I'm thinking that Easter is a season rather than just like 3 days. I know technically it is 3 days, but I don't know. I just was reflecting on why I didn't feel all resurrection-y. And I think I'm still stuck around Good Friday. I assume it will come in due course, but I feel quite, yeah.
Well, you can't fake your feelings, can you? I mean, you shouldn't. And
I have done. But no, yeah, I don't. Well, I don't anymore.
We all do at times, don't we? Of course we do. But no, what I mean is about how you genuinely feel. You can't and shouldn't sort of, certainly before God, try and fake that. And if you don't feel fresh and excited, I think there's lots of reasons for that, isn't there? All the stuff that's been going on for you.
I think so.
And isn't one of the good things, therefore, about Holy Week, and in fact about the whole gospel story, is that there's, and you might say about the whole biblical story actually, there's space in there for all these feelings. That's okay.
Yeah, exactly. I've come to that later in life, but it definitely is. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree.
So this year, Easter was probably more for you about Good Friday and Holy Saturday.
Yes, I think so. Processing loss and, concerns and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, Easter is for life, Joe, not just for Christmas.
Thank you.
Oh, hang on.
A new year. Anyway, no, wait.
I think you'll have Easter moments. We'll all get Easter moments.
I hope so. Yeah.
Sometimes we get Good Friday moments, and sometimes, you know, you can't manufacture it.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm waiting for my Easter Sunday moment.
Yeah.
Maybe it will come when I come and visit you for the King's coronation in a few weeks' time.
This is true. That is something. Yeah, I feel slightly Holy Saturday now. Anyway, I think the thing is about Easter is you do get all these varied things, and you get them in the messaging as well. I was listening to someone today, and they were, you know, it's very good. It's a lovely thing, but there was a lot in the service about sin and wrath, and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and I was thinking, Easter is so much about life.
Yeah.
Really. So, you know, if you say, as people sometimes do, you know, that the symbol of our faith is a cross, which it is. But it's also, I think it's also a circle. Because I think Easter has those two things. It has the cross and it has the stone that was rolled away.
Yeah, that's good.
So, you know, I'd love to kind of see more emphasis on the circle sometimes, you know.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Has that ever been talking
about this last week?
Have you just invented this, or is that an actual thing? Has a circle ever been bigger part of imagery? No. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, the Tom Wright talks about how the great story of the gospel, the claims, the very claims of the New Testament writers are about two things, they were about the cross and the tomb.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have the dead body. And you have to have the empty tomb, and that's the resurrection. So I think you can't have one without the other. So, you know, I don't want to minimise the emphasis on the cross or the symbolism of it. We've both got crosses in our houses and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But I wonder, really, whether that becomes slightly overwhelming at times.
Mm.
So I guess all I'm saying is sometimes you'll feel more the cross and sometimes you'll feel more the circle, you know, that's how it worked, really.
Yeah, for sure. Ah, well, good. So, can I give a church notice?
Go on then.
Okay, so the Staying Defiantly that we've lovingly called What the Hell is Salvation? And this is going to be just an evening Zoom with Dave Steele. And you're welcome to come along as the expert on historical views of hell, by the way. I mean, you're in if you want that. We're going to be looking at that whole notion of hell. And I suppose the backdrop to this is we're asking the question, is it really time for us to ditch the whole doctrine of hell as an afterlife concept? Could you do that with any sense of integrity while staying true to the Bible? I suppose is a subtext there. So
interesting.
There. Yeah.
Well, I might come along. Well, do you want to say when it is, by the way?
I feel I should say when it is. It's on Tuesday, the 25th of April, which is, what is that? I mean, by the time this goes out, it's only about 10 days away, isn't it? So, just come along. Tickets are free. You do book a ticket because that's helpful for us to know how many people are coming. And anyone really felt they wanted to put in a donation, they're very welcome to do that. That'd be great. That'll go to Dave, essentially. Yeah, so that, it'd be good. I hope it will be a really interesting evening. It would be very sad if it was just very dull.
Yes, it would be a different form of hell, I suppose.
I suppose it would, yeah. Just a torturous evening of two blokes who don't know anything.
More experiential, really.
Yeah, exactly. Come and discover hell.
Quite good from that point of view. Anyway, look, I wanted to ask you, but maybe we've already covered it, how the turning up was going.
Oh, thank you. I'm very consciously aware of it, and being consciously aware of it, remembering it, makes me do it. So I think I'm turning up every day. Today was my first funeral for way over a month. Just trying to be aware of what's going on and the people and things around me. And yeah, I've turned up. I turned up today, I think. Yeah.
Good.
And have done. Yeah. How's wisdomness? I must say, I think you're handling things well, if I may say so at the moment.
Well, do you know what we were talking about earlier about disguising your feelings? Yes, I think it's a really interesting thing, because as you pointed out last week, you know, being more wise is a lifetime commitment.
Yeah, it's...
You know, it's not really something you say, well, this week I'll be wise, next week I'll be really stupid. I think for me, it's about the intentionality of it. It's a bit like yours. You know, you're being intentional in turning up. I'm trying to think through, really consciously, what's a wise response to this, and that is helping. I think
good.
In some ways, it's a sort of spiritualized. You know, what's that mental health thing? Is it? It's cognitive behavior. So, you know, it's those kind of where you think,
CBT,
you step
yeah.
back and CBT yeah. where you think through it. You know, I think all these things have such a big overlap in common. So I think it means not actually trying to pretend that you feel okay, for example, when you don't, but realizing that whatever you're feeling at this time is a temporary thing. You know, it's not a permanent state of affairs necessarily. You know, as somebody very wise once said, all things should pass. Was it George Harrison? I think it was. Yeah. Anyway, and I suppose it's making me deliberately sort of reflect on things. I as you know, I like metaphors, I like symbolism, I like kind of finding meaning in stories. That's the writer in me. I like doing all that. But I think that's quite useful in terms of what's a wise response to this. What can I draw out of this situation? What can I draw out of my own feelings? What I need to do probably is get back to some of the practices that I used to do, and I was doing that this morning. I was doing more intentional reading and things like that. So I need to sort of build that back in. But I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing to focus on. Mm. And, you know, who knows, it might work. You never know.
Yeah, and one of the things I think is quite useful to do in life is, how do you want to be when things go wrong? Like, you need to think about that while things aren't going wrong, it seems to me. Because if once they have gone wrong, it's a bit too late. You're probably reacting. But it's nice to think. Yeah. And certainly, you know, just being with my brother, I was thinking about, how would I be if this was all happening to me? And how do I want to be if and when stuff like that does happen to me? I've got a fairly clear idea of how I want to be. Whether I will be remains to be seen.
I mean, I think that's such a good question and a helpful reflection, because it's, you know, most of our lives we're spent hoping that things won't go wrong or trying to do everything that we can to avoid it rather than what you're suggesting, which is to kind of go, well, things are going to go wrong.
Yes, definitely, you know, are. Yeah.
Your valves are going to blow
at some
point.
Yes, literally and metaphorically.
Yeah, so how will you be at those points?
Yeah.
I have thought about it quite a lot in my life, because obviously when you deal with a lot of, when you work with Christians who've experienced persecution, you'd naturally think, what would I be like under those circumstances?
Yeah.
But I think in some ways that's such an extreme thing. You're more likely to bring it back to kind of before your car journey, thinking, how am I going to be in the traffic jam?
Yeah, exactly. How am I going to be when someone cuts me up? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In my case, how am I going to be when the engine management light comes on again? What am I going to react like?
Yes.
So that's great, because I think, you know, wisdomness, therefore, is not just about reflecting on past events. It's also about preparing for future events, isn't it? It's really that's what I need to do as well. So good. Gosh.
Cool. Okay. Genuinely
helpful.
Oh, well, there's a first. Now, listen, let's do a couple of bits of feedback, but from Facebook. So,
really?
Okay. Yeah, okay. So following the Mexican episode, I think it was episode 234, which you entitled The Protestant Sleep Ethic. You may remember.
It's a good title, isn't it?
It's a good title. I love that title.
That is a book title waiting to happen, I feel.
Yes, exactly. Well, Roz did comment on that and said, though it was only 20 minutes long, she still fell fast asleep before the end. So it's good to know we've still got it. Thanks for that, Roz.
Excellent. It works.
Yeah, I posted some things up and some meditations and some thoughts over Easter, and I put up the Richard Rohr email for the day on Easter Day and said, I really think this is worth a read. Someone said they didn't think it was worth a read, and I don't really want to pick on them because they're a beautiful listener, so you know they're fantastic, and you know they put down why they thought it wasn't so good. But there was just one word they used to describe Richard Rohr, and I sort of thought it'd be nice to talk about that without talking about this guy at all. But he said it was dangerous. What Richard Rohr was sort of teaching. And certainly I remember in my past, certainly when the fallout of the church, I was told that what I now believe was dangerous. And I just thought it'd be good to sort of revisit that a bit. And because I think when you're questioning everything, you know, that can be a bit of a, well, that's dangerous. It can really shut down discussion, it seems to me. So what exactly is the danger in changing your belief system a bit, or perhaps having a different view of Trinity or how we understand the incarnation of Christ in Jesus? And all that, you know, what is it that could be dangerous? And if it's, you know, if we're meaning, well, you're now in danger of losing your salvation, i.e. going to hell perhaps, or just not experiencing the afterlife, whatever you believe about hell, then at what point have you slipped off the edge of the cliff? You know, it's not just it's dangerous, you've had it. So I thought it's just an interesting reflection on that. When do you believe some heresy that's so bad you're cast into the pit of hell?
Yeah, well, I think there's a few things to say before then. One is, you should never assume that what is posted on Facebook is necessarily a jointly held opinion.
Oh, no,
I have no idea.
You don't have a clue what I put up on Facebook, do you?
No, but I did read this piece.
Did you?
And, I didn't think it was so much dangerous as completely incomprehensible, to be honest. But, you know, that's more...
You are going to end up hurting Fluffy's feelings at this rate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the other thing is, obviously, within the podcast, we often disagree, and you'll say things that actually, certainly at points, I felt were not, you know, I have probably have used the word dangerous. I probably have said, I think that's a dangerous line to take. And what it's forcing me to reflect what I mean by that. I think sometimes you've said things, particularly as we began the journey, that I found very uncomfortable. I remember having debates about the use of the word father versus the divine.
I
really didn't like that. I've come to be perfectly comfortable with that now. So partly it's because I felt sort of shaken. But I think that there will be things, frankly, we ought to just say to any listener, there'll be things that either of us say that you probably don't agree with.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just the way of it, really.
Yeah.
So the word dangerous, I think, is a funny thing. I was once told, I preached a sermon, and I was once told that Walter Brueggemann was dangerous. I had two people tell me. And Brueggemann is like a massively respected Old Testament scholar.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, for the life of me, I couldn't see how it was dangerous. But then his book is very heavy. You could do your back in.
That can be dangerous.
You know. Yeah. lifting it was a was a stretch. I don't know. Sometimes I think there's the discomfort. This is not my line, but I can't remember where it came from. But somebody once said, you know, we treat theology like brain surgery.
Right.
One false move and you're dead. And, you know, he didn't really see it like that. Theology should be more playful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should be able to sort of play around with ideas without fearing that it's perilous like that. So I think probably misleading is a better word than dangerous. Yeah. People might feel this is going to lead you in a certain direction, which is not helpful.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that we will say things that, you know, that some listeners will think, well, if you go down that route, then this is going to happen. That's not healthy. That's
yeah,
not a good
sure.
thing.
I suppose one of the things I've noticed as I've got older is a lot less. I mean, that's a word I would have used in the past. That person is dangerous. They're teaching a falsehood
yeah.
or they're something heretical because it's something different to what I believe fundamentally. I suppose two things happen as I've got older. One, I hope a bit of humility that makes you realise I have obviously got a lot of misunderstandings and a whole lot wrong in my own theology. And I'm sure as I get older, there'll still be a whole heap wrong. So I need to be much more open to other people's views because they may have something right that I've got wrong. So point number one, I think as you get older, hopefully you do grow a little bit in humility about how little you actually understand.
Oh, yeah.
I think the other thing, as has happened for me, is relationship is more important than agreeing about everything. So I genuinely feel like I'm able to love and care for people, who believe just very different things to me. And that doesn't really bother me because they're still fundamentally brothers and sisters and in humanity or in Christ, whatever language you want to use there.
Mm.
You know, I know I don't agree with you and all your theology, but it does not stop me thoroughly enjoying your company and wanting to spend time with you. And, you know, that's fine. And I feel like that more and more the older I get. You know, I think, you know, again, moving through mid-faith Christ, I'm not so angsty being with Christians who believe totally different things to me, or, you know, things that I used to believe that I don't believe anymore. It may bother them, though.
Yes.
That's the difficulty, yes. That I don't believe the same as them because they're not on the same page as me. But
yeah, I think that's a very important point. I mean, and Paul obviously wrestled with it hugely. This is not new.
Yeah.
Paul talks about having to make compromises because he doesn't want to be a sort of stumbling block to people. He doesn't want to cause dissension or fault. So this goes right back to the very beginning.
Acts, yeah.
I think it's true to say that theology can be very dangerous. For me, I think it's what is the outcome of a line of thought going to be?
Right.
And when I say theology can be very dangerous, it can justify brutal and appalling behaviour.
Yes. So that in that case, it really can be dangerous, can't it?
Yeah, genuinely dangerous to people. Because let's take an example. The snake handling churches.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of those in Kentucky and places.
Yeah.
You know, so if you take a literal view of the Bible and you say, well, they'll handle snakes, and that's genuinely dangerous. Physically dangerous to yourself.
Yeah.
So I would say that that's where the word really works. In the Badly Behaved Bible, I talk about the idea of what's called a Malachite theology, where you brand somebody, you brand a particular group as like the Amalekites, who were wiped out in the Old Testament. God ordered them to be wiped out, except they weren't actually wiped out.
Okay.
Anyway, leave that aside.
Yeah.
But that's been used to justify massacring other people. So, simply recalibrate. There's an explicit example in the Rwandan conflict where a preacher likened, I can't remember whether it was the Hutus or the Tutsis, to Amalekites, and said it was, you know, our duty, therefore, to destroy them.
Yeah, and you think about the chaplains that blessed the planes that carried the A-bombs to Hiroshima and all those sort of places, and somehow you've then got a religion that endorses killing tens of thousands of people in the name of the Prince of Peace, which seems odd.
And let's take a smaller example closer to home. If you've got a theology of, say, extreme asceticism, fasting, That could be a real danger to you.
Yeah.
A physical danger. Or if you've got a theology that says, well, it's not at all about works, it's about grace, it's all about grace, it doesn't matter what you do. Well, that's a dangerous thing to go to, because you don't do anything for other people then. So there's always a danger that you're going to fall into pietism whatever.
I know what you're saying. I don't quite agree because, I mean, humanists, I know, sort of would push back very, very quickly about this idea that if you don't believe in a God, a good God, then and you don't believe in judgment and you don't believe, then you've got no reason to be good. So you're going to go around living hugely immoral lives and killing lots of people because you've got no basis for your morality if there is no God. And, you know, a humanist would knock that argument down in 10 seconds flat by saying, well, actually, no, you can just be a good, loving, kind human being because that makes sense.
Well, I was thinking of genuine examples of it. Rather, I wasn't saying that everybody who believes that is like that.
No, I know.
But I can remember the battles that we had many, many years ago in Oasis between people who said, well, aren't you just relying on good works? They viewed it as almost a sort of bad thing that you did this work because I'm just saying about that.
I knew what you were saying. Yeah.
Your own faith can lead you into a certain level of behaviour. So for me, it's going to be always about outcome.
This. Yes.
What's the outcome of a piece of theological thinking? And I think this is true of a certain other of our correspondents, not just recently, but over the years, that people have genuinely felt that if we go down a certain route, then people won't be saved. You know, I respect that thought. I respect that concern. I don't necessarily think they're right, but I respect at least their concern for that, because they're concerned for other people's souls.
Sure.
How do we rationalise it? How do we deal with it? I don't know. I don't feel like we can stop asking questions or, you know, responding to things. I think one of the ways is to sort of be aware that, you know, we put up stuff sometimes that we find interesting, but not always that we agree with. I don't know, really.
I think it's good. I mean, from my point of view, we have discussed anything and everything in Soul Place. And I think it's quite important to say in that context, like, no one's going to call you dangerous if you want to explore and ask some pretty gutsy questions about how we do things and theology and the nature of God and even the existence of God. This is a space where you can do all that stuff, I suppose. And I suppose sometimes I import that understanding into the podcast as well. You know, I think any question is up for grabs, and we're try and answer it honestly, not with the answer we think we should say, but the answer as we actually sort of see things and feel things and experience things. So.
But it's an interesting question. I mean, in mid-faith crisis, what is a heresy? You know, that's an interesting question now for us. We've talked a lot in the past about what are our beliefs, what are our creeds, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What is an actual heresy is a kind of question. And I suppose the historian in me always goes, pretty much every theologian's been called a heretic at some point.
Yeah.
You know, they just all have. And everybody is slightly heretical. In some way. Is it dangerous? I don't know. It depends how actively misleading and where the destination you're taking people is.
Yeah, I think if you're becoming a more Christ-like person, then probably your theology is going in the right direction.
Yeah.
If you're becoming and, you know, find yourself swearing a lot more, then probably your theology has gone off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, so I think you've demonstrated the dangers of your own theology right there.
I have been hoisted by my own petard.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Is it leading you in a Christ-like direction? Theologians that lead you away, be they, you know, prosperity gospels or, you know, tent evangelists that say just give us your money or anything could be healed or I don't know, high church mystics who kind of wrap it all up in an incomprehensible sort of cloud of fluffiness, they all have their own perils and problems and and dangers, if you want to call it that way. But I think it's up to all of us to think, you know. Mm. There's a good George MacDonald quote that I came across the other day, and I haven't quoted him for a while. So he's talking about, I think it's in the one where he talks about the wrath of God and how he interprets it, which is a pretty unorthodox and interesting interpretation. He says this in it. He says, "My friends, I offer this only as a contribution towards the understanding of our Lord's words. But if we ask him, he will lead us into all truth. And let us not be afraid to think, for he will not take it ill."
Yeah.
And I think that's it. Jesus wants us to think. I'm sure he does.
Yeah, I like that.
Anyway, one of the things I do think is that I need to go and have something to eat.
Yeah, you definitely do.
We've been going on far too long. So thank you to everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for your comments. Good, bad and the ugly. They're all welcome here.
And thank you to all those who support the podcast. We really are very grateful. If you would like to support the podcast, you can do so following the links in the show notes or on our website.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to write into the podcast, you can do so by sending an email to
joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Be great to hear from you. Thank you. Also, I meant to say we got some interviews coming up. Do I keep quiet about that?
Yes.
Okay. We got some interviews coming up, listeners, but don't tell Nick.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to those.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.
Yeah, we'll be back with you next week. And listen, if you haven't experienced the Resurrection Sunday joy thing yet, don't worry. It'll come. It'll just sneak up on you when you least expect it.